You're listening to the Sketchnote Army Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rohde, the author of the Sketchnote Handbook and the Sketchnote Workbook, and this is the podcast where I chat with sketchnoters and visual thinkers and try to understand what makes them tick. This episode of the Sketchnote Army Podcast is brought to you by Neuland, the innovative maker of visual thinking tools. Every Neuland product is designed with passion to be durable and sustainable. Listen to Ben Felis, a graphic recorder from Berlin, who loves his graphic Wally.
Check out Neuland's new graphic Wally. It is the first graphic Wally for your home office. Elegant in design, portable, easy to attach to any table and expandable. It is the perfect board for anyone who likes to draw. One paper roll provides 82 feet of space for creative ideas. It is ideal for visual thinkers, visual facilitators, and graphic recorders.
Hey, thanks, Ben. Save 15% with code Neuland at sketchnotearmy-2021 at neuland.com until May 30th, 2021. And now, on with the show. In this episode, hear from Benjamin Felis, a former graffiti artist and punk rocker turned graphic recorder, facilitator, sketchnoter, and visual teacher. Hear how Ben's early life as a graffiti artist led him into visual thinking and working with large canvases, and how his time as a punk rocker helps him go for it every single day. This is a discussion you're just going to love. Hey everyone, this is Mike Rohde, and I'm here with my friend Ben Felis. Ben, welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome, Mike. Hi.
And it's so good to have you. We've crossed paths this year a bunch of times. Before that, I'd seen your work around, but I hadn't really talked with you on social media. But once we started working together, we just found we really synced up quickly. And Ben was someone who I wanted to get on the show, partly for that, and also because you and Nadine are partners in Visiting Berlin, which I wasn't aware of, which is really cool to know. So we have a friend of a friend of the show.
Yeah, hello to Nadine.
Yeah, so she had a great podcast interview last season. Really loved talking with her. And I think you guys sort of work together a bit. So I thought it was just a natural thing to talk to you next. So Ben, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, hi, my name is Ben. It's originally Benjamin Felis from Berlin, Germany, a small city here. And I'm 44 years old almost now. And I work as a graphic recorder, illustrator, and also I teach lots in visualization techniques and different directions. Hmm. So yeah, this is what I do. Graphic cool. Recorder mainly, and also teacher for visualization techniques.
That's really great. And I love the teaching that you do. Tell me a little bit about how you got into this business. I have someone, a little birdie, told me you once upon a time were like a punk rock bass player or something. Tell me a little bit about your story.
Actually, the story started a bit earlier than the punk rock thing was when I was about in my first years of my 20s. Mm-hmm. But before I was another cool thing. I was a graffiti artist. I was a graffiti dude, basically. Yeah, and this is also how I got my training into the whole visualization field. So I did an autodidactic training between 13 and 17 as a graffiti artist in my small hometown here in Germany. And this is where I started to, work with information spread on huge boards and walls and surfaces, and had to come to the point very quickly. This is basically where I got my drawing skills from. So I'm not like other people, a trained illustrator or artist or like James Bailey, fine artist or so. I learned in the street.
And I guess, there's a little bit of pressure. So it probably prepared you well in a bunch of ways for graphic recording. Number one, scale, right? Scale was always large. So you were prepared for that. And then there's always the worry that the police would come around the corner any minute, right? So there's the ability to work under pressure was in place, right? Would you say those things? Is that true? I mean,
absolutely. And you have to have your markers handy and ready and filled because, no mistakes could be, you didn't have time for mistakes. So you need to be really fast. And you also drew a lot, you practice lots, you work lots on design, on typefaces, on colors, on characters, on shades, all kinds of things, fill-ins, you know. Mm-hmm. There were, and when you experimented lots with material also, and especially like the size, like big size drawing is something that I love. And I know other people like, you know, Eva Lotta Lam, mm-hmm. here from Germany as well. She's a sketchnoter, and I once had a discussion with her, and she said it can't be too small for her, basically. So like a 0.0005 pen is like the right size for her. And for me, it's like, give me a 50-yard wall and I would paint the whole thing with it, you know. So it's like different approaches. But it's good because, you know, there's like a high variation here in the field. And, you know, you have all sizes.
Oh, some extra small to extra large. And I think it's interesting, too, because as someone who comes into the field, if you're new to it, maybe you find affinity with Eva Lotta and really small, right? But you might have an affinity for very large like you do, and then you have a tendency to lean toward graphic recording with large spaces. Then maybe you're just in the middle, you know?
Yeah, maybe in the middle. Sometimes we do both, you know, because we all work digitally as well, and then, you know, we work on our tablets, and then for me, you have to be really small there. But but it's okay. But I'm next week I have my first live big graphic recording again, and I'm so looking forward to it. I got the job now, and I'm really happy after 6 months to be standing at the big wall again and do the big wall drawing.
Are you going to be in a big bubble with a hole in it and then your arm coming out or something? Or
yeah, I guess something like this. Yeah. Strange times, yeah. But coming back to the punk rock, so I actually started really with the graffiti, where I started the drawing, and then sometimes I dropped the pen and picked up the guitar and went a bit more creative on playing music. But you know, also there I did lots of the concert posters and LP covers. I put about 7 records or so, and I did a lot of the artwork there and designed T-shirts. And this is also where you know, learned a bit. Or could keep on working creatively in a visual way. And what I also learned from the punk rock time was like this DIY thing: do it on your own. Don't rely on any structures, on formal education, on circumstances. So it's, you know, you can do it if you need to do something, and do it on your own. And this is something that was also a good school for me. Like the graffiti was a good school for me, and the punk rock time was also a very good school for me.
Hmm. So I'm wondering, you have this experience of teaching yourself and sort of scrappy, do-it-yourself kind of mindset. Does this come through in your teaching? Because it would seem like if that's the way you informed yourself, do you give homework to your students that makes them be resourceful in that way?
I give them homework in a way that, of course, I show them some basic structure like we all do. I mean, you also teach, you know, we all work with the basic shapes, the visual ABC, and where to put the shade and the color and everything, and how to use typefaces and everything. But and also bring lots of books with them. And also, of course, bring your book. Like I told you, I carried your book around the whole world, basically, because I've been teaching in Brazil, in South Africa. I've been all over the place. I've worked in about 15 to 20 countries now, mainly also teaching. And I carried your book everywhere. But I always say, because, and I also carry the Big Car Blue books and other books, a small selection. It's always 5 books, but yours is always in it. And I use the books to show the people what's possible, you know, and that I can. I also use the books to practice. You know, I took the Big Car Blue book. I had put up a flip chart at my house, put on some music, not punk rock all the time, some relaxed music. You know, I was just like stupidly drawing symbols, like pages full of symbols. You know, just copying the symbols, just getting into the drawing, like into the drawing system and understanding on where to, you know, how to reduce complexity into simple shapes, forms, and figures. And I always bring the books, but mainly I teach them, here are the books, they're cool, and of course they're good to practice, but I would be happy if you don't need the books, you know, if you could do everything on your own, you know, because you have it all within you, and, you know, just like help them to discover, like a bit coming back to the confidence, you know, to the childish confidence, you know, like the inner child that's, you know, when you're, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years old, you draw, you draw 2 lines, 2 circles, and this is a dog, no question. That's what I always tell.
Right.
And, you know, now coming back to this confidence, and it's not about, you know, that copying a style. Of course, you know, it's a mixture between finding, doing your own thing and copying, because, you know, through copying, you can also learn. And I copied lots, you know, so, and this also, I'm still learning, you know. and you never stop learning. That's so nice about this profession.
I think it's interesting, and I've not studied a lot of your work, but I've seen enough of the way you operate and teach that I sort of have the sense that you challenge people. So you give them enough to tease them, but then at some point you just say, all right, now go do it, which is very much an approach that I take from my background. Yeah. Now I have a different background, but I know my father always taught me the best way to learn to do something is you watch someone do it and then you have to do it yourself, right? So there's a moment where it's always this theory. It's good to have the theory, but immediately follow it with activity or practice.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the real way to learn. So, and I see that in the work that you do. So that's pretty exciting to see.
And I also worked some time as an, it's called like adventure education outdoor trainer. And,
really?
Like with high ropes courses, and I went with school classes into the mountains, and that's where I got all the listening skills from. So, you know, I'm a graphic coder because, like, on one hand, I learned to draw through the graffiti, and then the listening part came through being like a moderator, facilitator, outdoor adventure trainer. And when I was doing the adventure training, was also about, you know, like making some, building some nice learning surroundings and like a good learning atmosphere. And this is what I think is also super important.
Yep.
To have a good learning atmosphere and like a joyful, fun, explorative learning atmosphere. And that's what I also try to provide in my seminars. And also, I have also classes online. And my online classes, I also would like to have like this more fun, entertaining, joyful learning in the online classes, and that's why I want to rework them a bit to make them a bit more like, you know, more playful, a bit more gamification into the online and into the offline seminars, because I think the playful, entertaining way is something where people learn, and often it's because, you know, people are so afraid of drawing and learning how to draw, and for them it's totally related to art, to bad grades in school, and you know, to take this fear off somehow, because, you know, come back to this, like I said before, to this inner child playful approach to something.
You're sort of trying to provide a safe way for them to let their guard down and be who they are.
Exactly,
and build
exactly.
Confidence,
and that's super important.
And
also find their own style, because, you know, it's there's like this sometimes just there's a bit of a graphic recording direction, I would say. It's not a style, but a direction that's all over the world. And I'm always looking for, you know, like new ways. And even though I'm also very classical in my way how I draw, but I'm happy when people come up with new ideas and new approaches.
So talk a little bit about what you are doing in the future. Like, what are you doing now, and what are you excited about as you go forward?
Right now, I'm a bit excited about all the tech thing, of course, because many, you know, the whole situation changed, and we had, like, everyone had to move lots of their work. I also had to move lots of my work online, and during the COVID pandemic, I started to work, you know, with cameras and lights and setups and formats, and I'm still learning there lots, you know, like which camera light setup, sound, which software to use. Mm-hmm. And I'm also part of the Newland family. I'm also a Newland toolmaster, and I now have the graphic Wally. That's like a table graphic recording drawing board, basically. And
I've seen you use that.
I used it for graphic recording, and it's amazing. I've seen like the promotion for it, and they said, yeah, here, so check it out, the board. And I was like, yeah, okay, looks quite nice, but why? I don't really see the sense in it. But then I got one, and I was like, wow, this is so cool, because it's super stable. It's a nice size of paper you can work on, and it's really fun. And then I first started to use it for graphic recordings, like in the last IFVP meeting. In the conference, I was, you know, having some talks covering with the graphic Wally. But then I started also to use it to teach, and that's really nice because you have like this endless paper, and, you know, you can scroll back and forth with the paper and play around. And this is where what I want to explore, how to use the graphic Wally more in teaching, and how to make teaching, like I said, a bit more playful again. Also, while you're using technology and why it's happening online, you know, but there are like so many things that you still can do I'm a big fan of analog work. Of course, I also work digitally, and I got the tablet, and I'm about to release also an online class on how to work digitally on any tablet with a software that runs on all sorts of tablets, and it definitely has also its advantages.
It's got its advantages.
But I'm super a fan of analog tools, and there was like this session from Heather Martinez, and who else was there? Sandra Dirks and Elena Uzaza from Spain, and they had a really nice session on how to use analog tools in the digital world, and this was also, I think you can also find it on the IFVP page. So listeners, on the IFVP page, go there and have a look if you're interested in facilitating and making a digital facilitation more to human happening again.
Tools
they use there, and it's also what I'm exploring a bit. You know, how to use like cutout shapes. That's what I see in the back here. The listener can't see it, but I have cutouts of coffee mugs, a microphone, and a little TV here, and it's the things that I can hold into the camera. You know, and make the workshops and seminars a bit more interactive.
Have a bit fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it is interesting to see how there's a hybrid form that's becoming common, or not common, but people are finding hybrid forms, like a mix of analog and digital, right? So, like these little images, I've started to see them in, especially visual thinking spaces, people holding up pictures on camera, right? Because you sort of have this opportunity. So it's got the analog feel to it, but it's using it in a digital way. It's really interesting to see how this, you know, for all the bad things that this pandemic is giving us, there's plenty of those, that there's also some real creativity that's happening in response to it, which I look to. So that's really good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also what the women girls said in the ICP session there, that it kind of brings the humanity back into the digital sphere again, you know, working like with cutout tools and things that pop up somehow. And that's really nice.
Well, we'll make sure to put links in the show notes to both of those. And the graphic Wally, for those who are wondering, is like a, I guess it's like a triangular thing that you set up on your desk. It's got a roll of paper at one end and sort of a, I guess, a thing to keep the paper down. And you can pull it through to the other side. So it's like a giant scroll, I guess. And you just work. Yeah. You know, you work and you keep pulling the paper as you need it until the paper roll runs out, which probably wouldn't be very soon. But it makes it possible to do it on a desktop. And then I guess you could set up your camera on that space too, right? And then it just like, instead of using a digital tool, you use a physical tool.
Absolutely,
Graphic recording.
Yeah. Oh, another thing that comes to my mind when speaking about mixing the physical and digital world, a friend of a colleague of mine here from Berlin, she does a lot of digital graphic recording, but she always has a camera showing onto the iPad, and she has always analog pens laying around to give kind of this this analog feeling into the situation. Yeah. And then people like it, so there seems to be a need for some human imperfection and analog tools and so on.
Well, it's kind of cool too, because you can, I suppose, if she's recording her doing the work, like the output of the tablet is showing it, but then having the camera on her actually shows her doing the work, like there is somebody's hand is doing the drawing erasing and the moving or whatever it is, right? It sort of makes the connection that it's not some machine that's doing it, it's a person doing it. I think that's really important.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, because usually when you share somehow your tablet screen, you just see the screen where things are popping up and evolving. Of course, it's also nice, but it's nice, you know. I'm a big fan of analog work, also analog graphic recording. When you see the person in front of a huge board drawing, like through the whole conference, like this huge board, that's for me at least, there are other opinions out there, but for me at least, this is more impressive than
I've always been impressed with that work. I've done a little bit of that work, not in the professional level, like in front of, you know, a giant room. I've done it with software teams, so mine's been more practical. So I appreciate like the work that's being done up in front and sort of the putting yourself out there that's happening, like the, you're basically in front doing this work, and if you make a mistake, like 600 people see it, right? So there's absolutely that pressure. Pressure is definitely there.
That's pressure. Yeah. That's also, you have to kind of cope with, you know. It's like also part of being a graphic recorder, like also this being in public, a public person, you know. It's on the event, visible for everyone and approachable, and that's mm-hmm. also why, you know, people during the breaks come always to you and ask you lots of questions, and you just wanted to go to the bathroom and don't have time. But it's like typical. It's like finally the break, the talk's over, you think, oh God, I made it through, and now want to run off to the bathroom, and then someone comes, sorry, what are you doing? Is this a profession? what do you do in your real life?
Exactly. You get to draw for a living. And, you know, the other pressure that we don't mention, too, that a graphic recorder may feel, that a sketchnoter, like you just sketchnoting something you're at, is the pressure to be neutral, like a reporter in a newspaper or something, right? Like you sort of leave your opinions out of it in many cases, right? That's, you're sort of paid to do that. So there's all these things that are hemming you in. Although I think, you know, I keep talking, there's this theme that if you listen to these podcasts around constraints and limitations, that I think is what makes us creative, right? By putting yourself in a corner, as I call it, it helps you to sort of find, because you're not allowed to escape, right? You have to look at the thing and solve a problem, right? It sort of pushes you. And I think I see in your life, like all those things, right? Like all the way from being a graffiti artist, there were all these limitations that hemmed you in, and you found a way to do this for what, 4 years, I think, right? 13 to 17.
Yeah.
And obviously you didn't go to prison, so you're, you know, you're still here, or maybe
I did.
But you got out apparently. So
yeah, but it was only when it was basically on the first one. I was 13 back then, and just for one night. We were like three little boys caught by the police, and they held us in prison for a night, and then we got sent back to our parents. So, but all the charges got like dropped, I don't know, because we are too young.
So I mean, you know, that's a theme in your life. Then you move to, you know, being a punk rocker, right? So there's, and you sort of punk rock, I think by its nature, if you do any research in it, is this idea of bringing it back to the roots, right? It's sort of in the purest sense, radical, right? You sort of strip back minimal instruments, you know, you know, the singer is sort of like expressing emotion, which could see, you know, could be anger or whatever, right? But it's like just letting it all out, right? So there's sort of a constraint there as well. All the way through your life, there's been this embracing of constraints, which I like.
Yeah, other than punk rock music, you only have three chords.
So you don't have to be a great artist to do it if you want to get into it. Although I'm sure there's quite good musicians in punk
absolutely,
rock.
Absolutely, yeah.
Surprise people.
Yeah. I mean, not like in metal or so, but there's still some good people. Yeah, it's so interesting that to talk about the pressure. You know, like looking for maybe an urge or a need for pressure. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I always have the best ideas, you know, like under pressure somehow. It's stupid. When I have a deadline, you know, the day before, I'm like, this is it. That's what I'm going to do. Like finding a present for my wife or so, you know, like she's like birthday in 2 months, and I think about it every day. I'm like, oh, what could I get? And then the night before, it's like, oh, this is it. And then I start to get creative.
There is something about that, isn't there? Yeah.
Somehow, yes. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I want to shift into tools now. Of course, I know what you're going to say for markers. let's talk a little bit about analog tools and the things that you like, and then we'll switch to digital.
So in the analog tools, I'm also like one of those Newland addicts. I'm mainly also using, of course, Newland tools, and I think you also provide a discount for people listening to the podcast. Mm-hmm. And it comes also from experience. You know, I've been through a lot of markers in my youth, and you know, and also refilling, you know, stuff like things like refilling your marker, you know, to have a proper refill system is something that's for me, like deciding if I want to take the one or other marker. And you know, there are a lot of, and also like in terms of economic sustainability, I think being able to refill your markers is something that you should always consider. I mean, there's always big discussions about which acrylic markers, and, you know, and many people go for Posca, but Posca is like a brand I don't like, because they only have like one-way markers, and that's why I would take rather other brands. But also, you know, like working on paper, you know, and having like markers that run well, have nice colors, you know, and don't go through the paper, it's things that you need. And then you need a wide range of colors, you need a wide range of tip. And of course, you know, at some point you find the markers that you want. And It's, I mean, there's people saying like the best marker is the one that's next to you that you have, but it's nice to have a good marker, to have a good tool yeah. in your hand, no matter what you do. Now, also, you know, when I'm here now doing the recording, and also during the pandemic, I started a YouTube channel, and I started with very low tech, and now I'm getting better, have better lighting and a better microphone. Mm-hmm. And that makes it just nicer to work. You know, it's more fun, it's more enjoyable, and like cooking. You know, when you go into the kitchen and you have like a nice set of cutlery and nice pots and pans.
It takes away a failure point, right? Like I think of it like when I do sketchnoting or any kind of work. Like as much as I can prepare and the things work well, it takes away a pressure point, so I can focus on the area that makes sense. So in other words, if you have good tools, right, it's okay to use like junky tools if you want to be scrappy, but at some point, like if you're serious about it, having this tool that you know will always deliver a line and it's always going to lay on the paper a certain way, like you get your stuff lined up, you don't have to think about that anymore, right? It takes a thing off the table, and now you can focus on the listening and analyzing and making sense, right? Because you're not worried about your marker drying up or next time I put it on the page, will something come out or will it die, right? You don't want that feeling. Yeah, in the middle of a session, especially like we talk about the pressure of being, you know, whenever you go in front of a group, even if it's on camera, like people watching you do this work, the last thing you need is some point of failure that you could have controlled, right? So
yeah,
I think that's a really important point for people to realize.
That's a super important point. That's also what you will be on my YouTube channel next week. And also I ask you to do a small statement there. And also what you said, and you know, that like being prepared is like key to deliver good work, because the work is stressful and the work can be tough, you know, and you have to be concentrated. And so make it as nice for you as possible. And that brings me to another thing that what's also nice is when you work live to exactly look where you stand, you know, because you should be seated somewhere or placed somewhere where you have a good sound, because you know when you're turned away from the presentation and don't have a good sound, that's also something that's super important.
You have to pick that up. Yeah,
you have to pick it up. That's a good point. Okay, but I'm getting off the topic now because you want to talk about talk about the analog tools. Yeah.
Yeah,
and of course, I like my Newland markers. And one tip I have is, I bring the tips later.
Yeah, we'll save those for the next part. But So you know, you have Newland stuff. Are there any other tools that you use in addition, like say a gel pen or some other tool that Newland just doesn't make it, right? Like they have a pretty wide variety and cover almost everything. But there's some things that they don't make. That's just not their specialty. Is there some other tools that you use that are not, you know, from another company or?
No, of course not. I use pencils is what I use, but in markers, I used lots the Molotov acrylic markers. I'm a big fan of the Molotov acrylic markers because you can also refill them and exchange the tips and everything. Mm-hmm. It's a German company. They also originally come from graffiti. Maybe that's also why I like the markers. But also I was experimenting lots on with different surfaces, you know, and like working cardboard, working on plastic, working on with cutouts on different paper color with spray paint. I was quite experimental when it came to graphic recording too. Find new formats and sometimes
that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's super interesting topic, and there's lots still to be discovered. And especially when you want to, for instance, work with white on a dark background, you know, acrylic markers. Paint. Yeah, exactly.
So do you find like, is the way you use it that you would lay down an acrylic layer and then draw on top of it once it dries? I assume that acrylic would dry pretty quickly, so you could work with it that way.
It does. What I also do is that I got some, some sheets of plastic, plastic, stickable plastic. Like a plastic sticker. And then there's some plastic sticker that are not shiny, that are not glossy. What's the opposite of glossy? They're matte.
Yeah.
And I used to cut out forms out of those plastic stickers and put them onto the paper, and then I was drawing with acrylic on it, and this was really nice because then you're way faster, because you know when you first make the acrylic layer, then you have to wait until it's dry, then you have to go over the other acrylic, and often when you go, for instance, with white on black, I experienced, at least. Maybe I was not so good in handling the tools, but I always needed to make like two layers of white, at least, that the white would come off nicely. And working like, with those stickers, it was another workaround, a nice workaround.
So that would provide the foundation to lay a nice single layer, and it would dry quickly, and
exactly,
and you can immediately work on top of it. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and then I also work lots with stickers, you know, like with white label stickers to cover mixed mistakes. I have always a small thread of a little rope with me for big circles.
Mm.
What else to use?
You have scissors. like a little scissors or something, like to cut a little piece of sticker
scissors,
and cover?
Yeah, scissors, of course. Yeah, exactly, exactly, yeah.
And so when you use that sticker, it's matte, right? So can you use like a Neuland marker on top of it? So let's say you made an error,
yes,
like a typo.
Yes.
You stick that on there, and then you write right on top of it.
Yeah, and even Neuland provides you with like a sheet of paper with stickers in different sizes on it.
Gotcha.
And that's super nice. And I always have loads of them with me because in every graph recording, I mess up at some point because, you know, concentration, and then I have a spell or a typo somewhere, and then it happens.
Interesting. Are there any, are you a notebook person? Do you like notebooks? Or are there any notebooks that you like that you carry? I know Neuland actually makes some really beautiful ones.
I'm not a notebook person. No, I'm more, I'm like for the big sizes, you know. I work with big paper, big paper rolls, and I don't work on notebooks, actually.
Interesting.
Only time when I work on notebooks I just work on plain sheets of paper, like A4 sheets.
Okay.
And, this is what I use, but I don't use notebooks.
Interesting. That's something I haven't encountered before, but I'm sure there's probably more people.
There's
who
many
approach
people
it
that
way. Yeah,
I don't know, but I mean there are many sketchnoters that use. There's I think there's like a whole knowledge about notebooks, but I'm not a part of that.
Yeah,
and, maybe if you can recommend some to me, that would be nice. But
the Sketchnote Idea Book is a beautiful book. You know, you can.
That's true. Yeah,
we can connect you with that.
Yeah, maybe you should send me one, and then maybe I will get hooked up on Sketchbook.
We can do that for sure.
The last time I used Sketchbook was when I was a graffiti artist. Mm. You know, we called them black books, where we all made our secret sketches for the walls out there.
Mm. And that was like a black art notebook, something like that.
It was just a book. It was just called Black Book. The Black Book is like the secret drawing book of the graffiti artist.
Ah, and that's where you do your planning and such.
Exactly. And this one has always to be hid from the police. Super important because when they got their black book,
well, because they could go back and say, "Oh, you're the one that did it on Potsdam or Straße.
Exactly. Yeah.
So did you? So that's an interesting question I hadn't thought about. If you had this black book, did you not take it with you for the fear that it would be picked up? You would leave it at home, so you'd have to memorize, or
yeah,
did
you
make
you,
it small
you,
enough.
You were careful because, you know, of course you went to other graffiti friends, you know, then you took it with you to show it, because also like showing your work, you know, and then you secretly you met in the circle, and then everyone had a black book with them, and they were showing, and you got inspiration, and sometimes you even photocopied pages out of it to get like to copy the style of someone else, and you put a photocopy into your black book and try to get inspiration from there. Yeah.
And so, like, if you got in a situation where the police were coming and you had it, would you give it to someone else?
Or you? I didn't have this. luckily. But imagine, I would have done it. Yes, of course. Yeah.
That's an interesting. Like, it just that thread is interesting that you would have a notebook. Like, we think of notebooks as this. I do as this precious thing. The more I put into the notebook, the more valuable it becomes, and then I want to save it. Like to be out on the street and like. Oh, someone's going to catch me and see my sketch notes. I need to throw this in the trash. Like, just a really interesting thought to entertain.
Absolutely. Imagine like if sketch notes were forbidden.
You think maybe like in the background, so you have this history with these black books. Do you think that's part of the reason why you don't work with a notebook? Is there something about your past?
Like a fear. No.
You seem to embrace that background, so I don't think that's the case.
No, totally. I don't. I absolutely celebrate this background. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Even a nice story is because I grew up in a small town where I did all the graffiti stuff, and then later I got invited by a big company from the town to do a graphic recording, and I was like, no way, I'm coming back now. That's when I called up the local newspaper and said, hey, listen, I have a nice story from here. It's like this. this graffiti boy who was like fled from the city and now is coming back successfully as a graphic card and gets paid to draw on the walls. And they actually made an article out of it and I got a full-size print.
Wow. Is there a link to that online somewhere? If there's a link, we should share that too. That would be fun to share.
I can look it up. Yeah, it would be nice. There's pictures of it. I have the newspaper here somewhere, but it's nice. So they make this big article about me.
Maybe a photo.
Coming back, yeah.
So now what about digital tools? I think we've covered your analog tools.
No, we haven't covered the analog tools.
Because still have more. Okay, share that, please.
Because paper. I like to work on thick paper, which has about, I don't know how it's called, 120 to 150 milligrams
GSM,
per square meter. GSM. And in the beginning, I worked lots with the Neuland paper, but the paper's a bit too thin for me. And that's also a thing where I think Neuland could improve a bit also for the graphic Wally. And I showed the graphic Wally on the German graphic recording conference, and this was basically the feedback that people would like to have a bit more thicker paper because, you know, it's nicer to draw on when you have a thicker paper. And it's also, I think it's what a colleague said to me one time, it's nicer when you give the picture to a client and, you know, it's like this thick art paper.
It's got
paper.
Some substance, yeah.
It's got some substance, you know, and it's more like, it has more value somehow, you know, like from the weight of the paper. And so I like thick paper. But of course, you know, when you have like a 1.50 meter to 3 meter or 4 meter paper, and you have to handle it somehow, you know.
It's like, it's heavy.
Because it's super heavy and can come off the wall, and then you have to. So I have a lot of stickers and clips with me to make the paper
to keep it on the wall.
To keep it on the wall, yeah. But I like thick paper, so yeah.
Do you like so you talked about using A4 paper. Have you ever thought about getting whatever paper you use on the wall cut down to A4 size so you can use it in small scale? Is that something you do?
I mean, that's what I do. I love A2. A2 is like a size, I don't know, compared, I don't know what the
I think English. That's bigger than, so there's A5, is the notebook size, then A4 is the printer paper size, and A3.
A4 is like US letter, I think, sounds something like around this, A4, isn't it?
And I think, I think that's a letter size, and I think the European standards are more consistent, so in other words, A5 is half of A4, and A4 is half of A3, and A3 is half. So it would be like an A2 would be two A3 sheets together, right? Something like that.
Four A4 sheets. Yeah, it's quite big. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I really like. This is the size I like, and then also a bit thicker paper, like also 100 GSM and 120 GSM. That's a nice size.
That's also what
I work on. I did a lot of during the pandemic. I did also those visual Zoom calls, and every time I was doing a graphic recording on my own, I used the paper. And also the first online class I put out, the visual superpower, I also worked on this paper size, and I totally love it because you can work with Newland markers and
Exactly. So that's interesting. Like, you know, tool choices sort of often dictate other things, right? So you like the Neuland markers, right? So then you have this large scale paper, but then it means you have to use that paper somewhere. That means you need a big desk or a wall or something. Do you just typically hang it on a wall and work? Like, it's just so natural to work on a wall that's your default place? Because that's a little different than a sketchnoter who might be using always an iPad or a notebook or sheets of paper on a desk, right? That might not be possible with an A2 sheet, right? You need an enormous desk to do that.
No, A2 is just fine for desk. The next size would be like a flip chart size, and that's too big.
Okay.
It's half a flip chart size, so a little bit less than half a flip chart size. And this is what you can fit on your desk. I think for me, it has a nice size to work on. And I also did some graphic recordings, you know, like when they were on a conference, like I did each talk on one A2 paper, and then we hung up like in this, I don't know how it's called, this hanging.
There's like a mosaic or something.
Yeah, exactly. You can put it up on the wall and arrange it nicely, and that's what I like. I like the size of paper. Yeah, but of course, also, I mean, it depends also the venue you work. You know, sometimes it's because you're not allowed to put anything on the wall or whatever. Then you have sometimes
it's
have to improvise on the size. Yeah, that's really tricky. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I have scissors with me, because sometimes I just in the last moment I have to cut down everything and rework my whole concept. But
yeah,
you know, pressure. I like it so. It's good.
it's, you know, the more I listen to you and the way you work, like, I think the reason you don't use a notebook is simply because it feels too constraining to you. You're so used to working in large scale that it would feel cramped for you to work inside a little notebook.
Maybe sometimes, yes. Yeah. But actually, sometimes when I go on a workshop and when there's a notebook provided, you know, I was with at least two Calvi Bird workshops. In the first one, they handed out like a nice notebook. Mm. And I tried, then I really make my notes inside there. And maybe this was really the last time I used the...
Maybe this is your new challenge, right? Your new constraint is seeing how you can work with a notebook. And I'll make sure you get an idea book. So we'll test you. You like the paper. It's 160 GSM, so it's pretty thick. So
that's cool. Nice. Yeah. Sounds nice.
Any other analog tools before you switch over to digital tools?
No, I think I'm good now. I look around my office. What do I use?
See what's there, yeah.
I mean, of course, I use some, sometimes some foam boards or some cardboard.
Okay.
That's what I sometimes use, yeah. But from the drawing tools, it's Newland markers in all sizes and colors.
Covers it.
And, yeah, basically covers it, yeah.
That's your sweet spot. What about digital? Because I know you've done teaching on digital and you use certain tools. I'd be interested in hearing what tools you use there.
All of them. Lots. I use lots. So, I mean, I did my first digital graphic recording in 2014. And back then I was working on a small iPad. I'm also a Mac person, an Apple person. Mm-hmm. So I use only iPads to draw on. Mm-hmm. And I used to work with a small iPad, and the first recordings I did were with what software did I use? Adobe Ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I worked with Adobe Ideas, Adobe Draw, now Adobe Fresco. Mm-hmm. Today, they released Adobe Illustrator on the iPad.
I saw that, yes.
Really nice. And I work lots, depending on what I do. So when I do an illustration work, I like to work with Adobe Draw, Adobe Fresco, and then with Illustrator together to make like some, I don't know, strategy maps or posters for a client. Mm-hmm. And of course, I know how to work with Procreate. I use Procreate sometimes for sketching and for experimenting. Mm. And also done quite a lot graphic recordings with using Procreate as well. Mm-hmm. And but I'm somehow a fan of Autodesk Sketchbook. It's a free simple app, and it doesn't have like this the projection function that's in Procreate, which is absolutely amazing. But there are other things that the app has, and because you can like have four or like up to six pens simultaneously on your screen, you know, you can just pick the different pens, and you don't have to, you know, open a menu, choose the pen, and then, you know, check the size again, because you can also kind of program them already. And that makes it really handy, and has also some nice gestures. And I mean, I think from the size, from the pixel size, it's not as big as Procreate, but you can make a decent A4 print easily, and this totally fine in most of the digital jobs.
Good enough
because
for most cases,
usually it's just, you know, published digitally somewhere on, I don't know, in presentations, on social media channels, and therefore it's...
Maybe a PDF or something that you would print, and it's good enough for a home printer.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And therefore it's really nice, so I'm a big fan of this app now. And...
Interesting.
I also tried Paper 53, of course, and other apps, but right now it's Sketchbook, Fresco, and Procreate. Those are the digital...
That's a good
three, of course, yeah. And then also it's the question, so how do you integrate them into the different conference call software systems, you know, it's like, that's, you know, and...
Complicated.
It's complicated, yeah. But I still have an old iPad, like first generation iPad Air Pro, and it still works, but let's see how long it will work. And then, of course, I have two Apple Pencils, I have two with me always. Because I want to make sure, when one runs out of ink, battery power, of course, then it's good to have a second one.
Digital
ink, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, that's what I use mainly digitally. And but you can go, like you know it, you can go really far with those tools. But it's kind of depending on the job I do. But like I said, like illustrations, assignments, illustrations I make with Fresco. Sketching, make it in Procreate somehow. And lately, graphic recording, I do it in Sketchbook because it's very intuitive, a super simple app.
It's quick.
And it's also it's also where I put my where I made my last online class. I record an online class on how to make graphic recording or little symbols for presentations or creative social media posts and little animations using Sketchbook because, you know, it's for free and it runs on all kind of systems, you know, no matter if you have like a Windows or OS system running. So that's nice.
It's almost like an industry standard. It's been around so long, right? It's just available to everyone, which is kind of nice. I haven't played with that for a long time. You're making me want to explore it again because it's been a while. Really interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting, of course. Do you work digitally lots?
Yeah, I actually more digitally lately, and I've been a long time user of paper from WeTransfer, that tool. I don't know why I've stuck with it. Like, I've played with Procreate and some of the other tools, but there's something about, it's sort of like probably the same reason you like Sketchbook Pro, is that I know the tools really well, and I don't have to think about how to use them. Once I get into a flow state, I just know where things are at, and I'm used to the, like, I know the way things work. And that's true of any tool, right? If I made a rule for myself, the next 30 days I can only use Procreate, I'm sure that I would find ways to use it and I would get used to it. And that's probably what I need to do to force myself.
Yeah.
But like if I go back to something, it's always going to be paper just because it's really quick. It's very constrained, like compared to some of the other tools, like you can't change the canvas size. There's lots of limitations. There's no layering. So like it forces you to sort of be in the moment a different way. And I kind of like that. Not everybody likes that, right? So, but I kind of like that. So it works for me, and I've used it for so many years now. It's just second nature. So, so that's been a good tool for me. And I could see, you know, you talk about Fresco. I've only played with that a little bit. I've used Concepts in a way, I think, that you're using it.
Oh, yeah.
And that is, you know, to do illustration work because I can export it out and bring it into Adobe Illustrator and then fix it up for the customer so it's printable and usable, right? It's probably the same thing with Fresco. Now Adobe Illustrator is on the iPad, right? So maybe I don't even have to use another tool, possibly. So I haven't played with the new Adobe Illustrator, which by the time this releases, maybe it's old Adobe Illustrator on the iPad, I don't know. So but you know, there's all these tools that are coming out, and a lot of the fun of it is finding, you know, the workflows that work for you, which is really clear when you talk about your tools here, right? In the way you use markers and acrylic markers and paper and even your digital tools, you're adapting them to fit your work style, which I think
absolutely,
is the right way to go. Yeah,
absolutely. And then, so of course, you know, I'm kind of used to all the Adobe from Adobe drawing programs, so I'm kind of used to the logic behind it. And I started with Concepts. I even bought it, but I somehow didn't get into.
Just didn't fit you. Yeah.
It didn't fit me. No, and I'm not against it or so. And I mean, there are many people that work with Concepts, and I think it's a great app. But
yeah, it is.
But and at some point, you also have to decide, you know, so where do you want to work? Because I mean, there's like, it's like just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's like so many other drawing apps out there, and I think there are 10, 20, 30 more that also do a nice job and work for other people as well. So find your marker, find your drawing software, you know,
stick with it,
you know, find your social media channel, you know, it's like sometimes you have to reduce your options to be successful in the work you do.
You have to find what works for you, right?
Wow.
No matter whether it's popular or not, right? So that's really good. So the last part of the show is tips. So we talked about three tips. We try to do this on every show where I frame it as maybe somebody's an intermediate sketchnoter. They've done a little bit of work. They're excited about it, but they want to level up a little bit. So what would be three things that you would suggest for someone who's in that place or for anybody listening?
So my three tips. So the first tip I have is to relax. And it's also, you know, to think about who you're doing this job for, you know. And this also determines the way how closely you listen, you know, because sometimes you have a job and it's kind of obvious that they just want to have a cool picture, that you have, it's more entertaining, you know, and that's where you can kind of step back, you know, you draw a nice picture, you put in some shade, you capture every 10th word, you know, put it on there and it's nice and totally works. And for this situation, it's absolutely fine. And there are other jobs, you know, we have to go a bit deeper into this more for the connections. And this is where I recommend The Four Levels of Listening by Kelvy Bird. And in her book, Generative Scribing, and this describes the levels absolutely nice. And this was for me kind of also a game changer when I, you know, thought about the situation where I had to do a graphic recording sketch note that, okay, which kind of listening should I adapt here? And sometimes you have to listen very carefully, very closely, and like in the Four Levels of Listening, listen to the unset, to the unset or unknown already, you know? And this is like, they go deeper, and it requires a lot more of attention and focus. Mm-hmm. And this kind of freed me, you know, because I did jobs where this was not needed at all, and so I could be more relaxed, like, in the situations. Another tip is, I also made a YouTube tutorial on this, is organize your canvas in advance. And I think we also talked about the session about in the visual Zoom call the two of us made together. You know, to have a layout for your some grid layout, at least for the graphic recording or sketch noting that you do, that you kind of, if it's a whole day situation, or if there's some program, you know, like if there's like a short input session, like this gives only a short, a short area on your, a small area of your drawing, you know, and like make grids, you know, and then determine how long is the content, the bigger the size on the canvas it is, you know, and you know, I lay out in the beginning, and also when you start to do like you said, do everything as much as you can in advance, you know, like. Put up the paper, make a grid system, set the headlines, set the title, set your name on there. Super important, you know. Put your name on there. Put the company logos. Prepare everything as good as you can, or as much as you can. That when you're in the situation, that you just can have to focus onto the content. And then also, when it gets too overwhelming, too much information is coming in, then there are two things that I recommend. Like, one thing is to work with constraints, you know, to say, okay, there's a lot of information coming, but I only take 5 points, you know, I reduce myself to 5 or 8 points that I put on there and not more. And you will miss out anyways, you know, you will miss out always parts of the information, and it's always subjective, and, you know, but try to focus on, you know, 5 to 8 things on one part of the paper, and that's it. And then what I also always recommend is, when you're listening, you kind of have to sort the information live, and that's what I always call this listen for the later relevance. That means you listen to the content in a way that you, like, every discussion or every presentation is there to answer one question, and you think, Before you do start with the graphic recording or sketch, I think, okay, what is the question this session is about, you know? And then you capture only the information that's relevant that answers this question, and everything else you leave out. Because often when I also talked about this in other situations, I also in a tutorial, I said, because often, you know, when you work with big companies, they always start with, you know, this is our big company, we make millions of revenue, we have like dependencies in so many countries, but it's totally irrelevant when the question is how can we survive with our company during Corona, you know. So then you only record those tips and nothing else.
It's almost like an anchor point, right? You're sort of looking, what's the anchor that's pulling me through this, and then you focus around that space, and then anything that's not around the anchor point is probably not as important, right?
And then often, you know, people show image, there's like image movies shown, or like there's some examples talked about, and sometimes not answering the question. So be really close to the question all the time. That can help you to
helps you survive. Decide what's important. Yeah,
exactly.
That's really good. Those are really good tips. I think there's like 7 tips in there, Ben. But so okay, sorry. He always gives more value. I love that about
you. Yeah, sorry. So. I talk so much. for interrupting you all the time.
No, it's awesome. It's just great. I love it. Like, it was fun. And, you know, we'll put those tips all in the show notes, of course, like we always do. Ben, how can people reach out to you? How can they follow your work and buy your classes and go to your live sessions and such? What's the best place for people to go?
Oh, I'm a big fan of Instagram. I'm lots on Instagram, but I also have a newsletter, and of course I have a YouTube channel. And I think also on the website. And on the website you find all the classes and so, but mainly on Instagram. On the Instagram I post basically everything, and Instagram, Facebook. I mean, Yeah, you'll find me somehow. If you want to, you'll find me. And I would be happy to be friends with you out there who's listening right now. Who are Isn't you? It, Hi.
He's a nice guy. Can't you tell by now? So I think it's like, is it Ben, at Ben Fellas or at Benjamin Fellas? I'm not sure which of those two.
It's Benjamin Fellas.
Benjamin Fellas, okay.
Benjamin Fellas together. It's not like Feliz Navidad with a Z.
Yeah.
With Z, it's with an S. Fellas.
Fellas. Exactly. Fellas. Yeah. F-E-L-I-S. Gotcha. Well, it's been really great to have you on, man. This is it's been a long time coming. I'm excited you could be here and share. Totally not what I expected. I haven't done any research. Many times I do that with guests just because it's more fun to have it unfold on the show. So like I hadn't realized you were a graffiti artist or a punk rocker or a high ropes course trainer or these things. So this is really fun to hear your experience and see how it, like, that's what's so interesting about the show is people can come from really unusual places and yet we all share this common thing. And what's great is your perspective on things is going to be different than other people. So I really appreciate that because you can help me, right? By you coming from your perspective, the things you see might be just the thing that I need to shift and make myself better, right? So that's the way I try to look at people in the space is they have a unique perspective that can help us. And the more people, like I totally believe in more voices. The more voices, the more chance you're going to catch people that need that. It's just like tools, right? You talked about trying a tool and it just doesn't fit. Like that can be teachers too, right? So maybe you're the right teacher for these people. And, you know, that's great. And the more people we have in the space, the more likely we'll catch. And ultimately, you know, our goal is to get people using visualization in whatever way they can. That's the ultimate goal, I think.
Absolutely.
Right? So I'm so glad that you're doing the work you do and you're so consistent and helpful and happy. I think that comes through in all of your work. So thank you for all the work you do. It's really appreciated by everybody in the world. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. And I totally forgot that I'm also a trained nurse, but we leave this out now. So, cool. Mike, super nice that you had me. Thank you for the invitation. You also do great work. We all do great work. And for everybody out there, you think, it's like always this big high names, big people here, but everyone is like super helpful and easy to approach. And if you have questions, ask the people directly. They are... It's such a nice field here. It's such a nice area. And let's keep the quality and let's keep this
friendliness,
atmosphere and friendliness. Yeah. That would be that lasts a long time. And
I think so. I think it just what we do now impacts the future because future people following us are going to follow our lead. So it's important Absolutely. That we lead in a good way. And I think we're doing that. So, well, for those of you who are listening, this will wrap another episode of the Sketchnote Army podcast. Until the next episode, we'll talk to you soon. The Sketchnote Army podcast was created by me, Mike Rohde, and brought to you by Rohde Zine Studios. It's produced and edited by Alec Polianis of Amp Creative Studios. The theme music was created by John Schiedemeyer. To support the creation of this show, I invite you to buy one of my books, the Sketchnote Handbook or the Sketchnote Workbook. You can find the books on Amazon or go to peachpit.com and use the code RODY40 for 40% off. Please share this podcast with other visual thinking friends and be sure to leave a nice rating on iTunes or your favorite podcast listening app so others can find the show.